I'm Jason Waller here with the BAM podcast. That's business, attitude, money, and I have got a fucking legend on the show today. This guy I got to meet through mutual friends. This guy just had a huge fucking event in Miami. I was busting his chops like, hey, next time get me to the invite. I definitely want to be there. I was jealous in a good way from the outside going, man, look at those icons. They're crushing it. People are fucking learning. But my man here, Eric Spofford, he is the CEO of Spofford Enterprises. He built a company, sold it, made tens of millions of dollars. I think even hundreds of millions of dollars. And then turn around, he's got a new business that he's involved in now. He does coaching, speaking, the whole nine. How you doing, Eric?
I'm very well, brother. Thanks for having me.
You like the energy? I'm trying to fucking bring it, baby.
Fucking go, fuck.
Right. So listen, I want to get to know you better. We were talking for a few minutes before then, but you know, I know your business was really helping people out that had addictive issues with drugs and things like that. So I want to kind of talk about your past so some of the listeners and viewers out here know exactly who you are and some of the struggles we had, then we can kind of get into the great stuff of the business.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the past is a interesting story, I guess. At 14 years old, I started messing around with OxyContin. And, you know, typical American opioid epidemic story, OxyContin turned to heroin, dropped out of high school at 15 years old and was living that street life for the next 7 years. And in 2006, right before my 22nd birthday, after more than 100 times of trying to get sober and change my life, I finally did it and stuck, and I've been consistently in recovery since then, which has been a little more than 16 years. And then went on to start my business in helping other people just like me.
Dude, that's so awesome. I mean, my brother has a lot of issues with drugs. He went to jail on and off for a few years and same thing. And then he tried to get off and then he started taking Suboxone, I think it was. Maybe they're, you know, trying to wing off and then got back on it bad, then got alcohol bad. Finally out, he's been clean for 5 months, super excited. He's trying to live his life a better way now. And I'm always worried because I've lost 5 friends to heroin since high school. And, you know, I only had like 7 really close friends. There's only 2 left. And I keep getting a phone call and there's a funeral and someone OD'd and something happened. And it's, you're right, there's a problem here. And to hear your inspiring story of you know, the struggles that you had, that's real, that's out there. It's an epidemic here in this country, and that you were able to overcome it. That's what I want listeners to hear. What steps did you have to take? What turned on in your head and said, fuck, I can't do this anymore? What gave you that power to change?
You know, it's cliche, but they say that you have to hit rock bottom. And I don't know if everyone has to. I think anyone at any time, at any moment can change their life for the better right now like that. But for me, what happened was I hit rock bottom. I was a drug dealer. The life was fun for a long time and I had plenty of money and plenty of resources. And then things just consistently got worse. I started getting in trouble. I started going to jail. I started burning relationships. The addiction started to catch up with me, you know, and what it ended up as was the last few years of my addiction. It was just pathetic and lonely, and I was homeless. I was on the streets. You know, there was a lot of drama. There was a lot of just every day was filled with drama, but the pivotal moment that I often tell in my story is the last day that I got high. It was December 6th of 2006, and in a moment of desperation, I robbed a guy for $82 with a butcher knife from the kitchen. And, you know, I took that $82 and I bought 4 $20 bags of heroin, and the police locked down the neighborhood that I robbed. It was a drug deal gone bad. He was trying to buy dope, and I robbed him, and because I didn't have any dope to sell him, but I was desperate. And that was the moment. I was hiding in that closet and I shot up 4 bags of heroin and I sat in that closet in the trap house in the hood all night long thinking that the police were going to kick the door in and find me. They didn't. And I was just like, this is it. Like, if I don't change, like, fucking right now, I'm dead. You know, I had 5 overdoses, you know, not baby overdoses, like waking up on life support, lucky to be alive, being resuscitated. I've been shot at, I've been stabbed, I had my head, you know, cracked open with a crowbar. I should have died 1,000 times, right. You know, and I made it out. So I just had this moment of clarity. At the time, I had nothing. I had two trash bags. I had two pairs of clothes and a trash bag. And that was all my worldly possessions. I was 135 pounds, track marks up and down my arms. And life wasn't going so hot for the kid at the moment right. at all.
How old but were you at that time? How old were you at that time?
21, almost 22.
Oh, shit. Still a baby.
Still a baby, but I got started so young. I mean, like right. the average, from the time someone turns to an IV heroin addict, their average life expectancy is 6 years. And so you're either dead in prison or you get sober and change your life from the moment you first stick a needle in your arm. That's a statistical average is 6 years. I was pushing almost seven. And so, you know, 7 years of that shit will kill the best of them. And like you, you know, even since then and since then, every single person that I was friends with, they all died, every single one of them. And, you know, it's a tragedy.
It is. Yeah, life's more fragile than we really realize until things like that happen. And I think some of the listeners can pick up that, you know, you hit rock bottom, but it could have been even worse. That was a wake-up call. And really the tip to some of these listeners is I always tell people, you control your own destiny. And I've been blessed. I've never been addicted to nothing. So I can't comment on what that's like. My brothers fought it. You know, I've had other family members fight. I've had friends die from it. You know, but I've always been scared in my head. Like, I've tried drugs, and I'm like the guy that's like, fuck, I'm freaking out, thinking the law's coming. I'm that guy, right? And I'm like, I can't do it. I'm such a fucking control freak, dude. And when I lose control, I'm like, ah, so I can't do it. So I can't relate to that. But what I can relate to is being in the mud, being broke, being abused, being sexually abused, being verbally, all this shit, not having anything, not having money. I can relate to some of that. And then you just get it. You just have enough. You're like, enough's a fucking enough. Like, is this what it's going to be? Is this why I'm here? Am I going to fucking change?
No doubt. 100%.
Yeah, that turned on for you. So then you get out, you start changing the steps to change. What happens then? You're 21 years old. You're like, fuck this. I got to have clarity and change the way I am. You start that process of being sober. What things do you get into to start making money? Because you were a drug dealer and you were doing the shit that you know, that's cool on TV, but real life, you could get hit with fucking crowbars, gun shot at. Like, it's not really fucking great. It's just TV great. In real life, it's like, holy fuck, what am I doing? What did you start to change to?
At that time, what was I doing? I started walking to 12-step meetings. And, okay. and in there, I met a guy from South Boston who had a call center. And he had a boiler room deal doing fundraising for different associations, like the Police Association, the Firemen Association. That was my first job. They gave me $200 a week and gave me commissions. And then from there, I went back to my whole life. I was in tree removal, logging, excavation, did that. My dad did that. So I grew up working with him and learning a family business. And I went back to that, but I started hustling quick too. I was buying shit on Craigslist, buying cars, buying four wheelers, you know, motorcycles and flipping them and just anything I could. And then I started doing side jobs. I cut a deal with my dad. I said, you know, I'll work for you and I'll run the crew. But nights and weekends, I want access to the equipment to sell my own, to do my own jobs. And so that was really kind of my first come up, was being able to create an opportunity with that. And so I'd be, you know, at someone's house cutting down the trees in their backyard, and the neighbor would come up and say, hey, I got some trees. And I'd be like, hey, I got you. And I'd go down and I'd cut a deal and I'd work a price with them. And then I'd do my dad shit all day long. And then I would go to the Taylor rental store or whatever it was. I'd rent those big ass lights.
Yeah.
And I'd be out there till midnight, 1 a.m. cutting trees down. I mean, the police showing up, like, you gotta shut this down. You can't be running a chainsaw at midnight. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's America. The fuck?
Oh my God. You know?
And so that was the hustle. And then it was through that. And then with help from my dad, we bought a bank-owned, foreclosed, three-family building in a small town called Derry, New Hampshire. And in 2008, I started the state of New Hampshire's first sober living house, which that business over 13 years, I grew to be one of the largest providers of addiction treatment services on the East Coast, which I sold in 2021.
That's amazing. And so you had that open for 8 years?
13. From the moment I started the sober house to closing day at the final transaction was 13 years, 2 months.
Private deal? Private company came in and bought it or public?
Private equity backed strategic business was the final buyer. Yeah.
Love it.
I had 3 successful minority sales prior to that to a family office.
So I'm always trying to educate the listeners on that, right? You know, bringing someone in minority to bring in some, you know, family funds to bring in the thing to cash to expand, but they don't get to call the shots, and then bring in another minority deal in to buy them out and have more funds in there. And then finally doing a private deal or public deal. I followed the same route on my company. So yeah, congrats to you. And that's a great story because you didn't finish high school. You didn't go to college. You were on the streets doing your shit. And then you went out and hustled. I love that you're like, look, Pops, I'm going to use your shit. I'll run your cruise. But if I close that neighbor, I get that referral, I'm out there hustling. I'm going to do that work. I just need access to equipment to build my coin. And so I love that because too many people out there, they're too fucking lazy, dude, to try to do something else. So they box themselves into like, I'm just going to do the 8 to 5 and I'm good. And you had that fire in your belly and you're like, fuck that. I can do this, but I need more. I'm opening that box and just trying to do more.
100%.
Yeah, I think I'd love to hear stories like that. I think people like that understand the real come up, like they've seen the worst of the worst and they start to see the best. When you start to give back to those people, when you created those facilities, what was that feeling you were getting? Because, yes, it's business, but that's just a part of it. It's the fulfillment and feeling you're getting from the other part. Talk about that.
That's honestly what happened before I did that was I got into recovery and I started this process of personal development through 12-step recovery at first. And it's been more since then. And I started to change from the inside out, you know, and I started to have this passionate recovery experience. And I started volunteering my time going into these like state funded run down treatment facilities and going in and just hanging out with the guys and teaching them recovery and sponsoring them and you know, just kicking it with them. And the high that I got off of helping other people and like pouring into someone else and seeing the result of like of my efforts in them, it triggered something in me. And I was like, I need to do this for the rest of my life. Like, I like helping people. And so when you like even fast forward, I built that whole business. The first 2 years of that sober house, I was still cutting trees down every day. Right. And I lived in the house with the guys. And so I'd wake up early as fuck and I would get them all together and we would pray and meditate and we would get together in the morning and do our morning ritual. We'd cook breakfast and get going, drink coffee. We'd all go out to our jobs. And then we'd come back, you know, in the afternoon, evening from work, and we would eat together. We'd go to a 12-step meeting. We'd go to a service commitment. We'd go work out. We would, you know, do whatever it is that we were doing as a tight-knit little thing. And then, you know, you fast forward. That was the infancy stages of that business. Today, that thing of, like, helping other people has stuck with me so much that I couldn't imagine my life without it. Like, I've had a very successful exit. I got to a place where I probably never needed to work again if I didn't want to. And right now I'm back building a treatment business. Like real life tonight, I'm leaving my house in beautiful Miami and flying to Columbus, Ohio. And at 9 a.m. tomorrow, I'll be in a room in front of 50 patients running a treatment group, a recovery group for the patients. And then the other verticals of business that I have is even my real estate investment. I do mostly low-income housing. I love it. I love it. I get the applications and I'm like, look at this. Look at this. This is a grandma raising 2 grandkids. You know, the mom's not around because she overdosed. The father's incarcerated. You know, people get this bad rap around Section 8. I weed, you know, we have a very stringent screening process. And so I weed a lot of that bull. There's a lot of BS, but I weed that stuff out and have the opportunity, even through my real estate investing, through a major part of it, to be able to give people opportunities and help them. And then thirdly, these are the 3 areas I spend my time on today. You know, I do this coaching program and I get to coach entrepreneurs. Another obvious large passion of mine is business. And so it's like, no matter what I'm doing, I move from this vertical to that vertical to that vertical. All of it has this common theme, this DNA of helping other people. And you know, it's the money's cool. I tell my guys all the time. I said, listen, I want you to be richer than me. But if you lose sight of other people and impact and purpose, then you know it's easy to get caught up in that stuff.
So let me unpeel a couple of things that you said that I want to regurgitate. On first of all, the feeling fulfillment, right? People always say, "Dude, what do you define as success?" And I tell people, success is happiness or fulfillment, right? I don't care if you work at Walmart and you push a broom all day. If you're fucking happy, I know people that are happy as hell that make $25,000 to $55,000 a year. I'm friends with people who make billions a year that are unhappy as hell. So that doesn't bring happiness. It's just a vehicle of a hey, you know what? It's nice that I have this. Surely makes things easier and you're able to give back more. You got to make enough money to give back more. That's another key that people seem to forget. It's not just, but that fulfilling part of helping that grandma that's raising her grandchild and the mother's not around, or that fulfilling part of helping these, you know, the 50 people in there in the rehab center that you're going to talk to get through the 12 steps. Or coaching, which I've just recently got into, which is so fulfilling to me. Like, oh my gosh.
I love it.
People don't know. People don't understand that is better than any kind of money you can make. That is like watching your kid graduate high school. I didn't graduate high school. Two of my fucking kids did. That's like watching one of your kids go to college. I didn't fucking go to college. One of my kids did. When you're able to help somebody and it's like, holy shit, that's worth all the prize in gold.
That's right.
Yeah, I love that. And then the second thing I wanted to unpeel was, you know, you're doing these other businesses, you're diversifying into this. You talked about losing focus. I'm always one that owns my own shit. In fact, my book was called Own Your Power, but in there I talk about, look, you got to own your own shit. Everybody fucks up. There were times when I started making money I've never made before, coming from the trailer park, never fucking had any nice clothes or shoes, anything. I fucking bought the Lambos. I bought the Ferraris. I bought the Rolls Royce. I fucking bought the $8 million fucking house. I did all the shits, right? I somewhat lost focus. Didn't piss my money away. I mean, I ended up losing, you know, my business, nothing to do with that in the future. And it's like, damn, I wasted so much time and energy, but I had successful exits in three of the businesses and minority stuff. So I made money and I have real estate, but I lost focus. I lost focus of things being fulfilled. I felt like when I got the Aventador, there were no midgets and fucking circus coming by to fucking celebrate. When I got the $8 million house, there were no special fireworks or fucking rolled out red carpet. Like it was all great, but when you get it, you lose, in my opinion, I lost focus of what am I chasing next? Like, I've got all these things. What else am I going to chase? And that's why rich people are more depressed than non-rich people, because they have nothing to chase. And what you did and what I finally started to see is you kept doing things that were fulfilling. Did you ever run to a spot where you're like, shit, like, it's great that I can buy this stuff, but it doesn't do anything for me?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, being in recovery kind of gave me a probably a competitive edge in this world, because it's been a deep, you know, it's been 16 years of intensive, you know, spiritual work that I've been doing in that. So I was kind of awakened to the truth of, like, dude, I was living in a $550 a month studio apartment in the fucking hood with no car, habitual offender on my license, no money, no furniture, sleeping on a pile of blankets. And that first winter I was sober, I couldn't even afford the heat bill. Yeah, but I got up and I walked through the hood, through the projects, and I went to this one rundown, crappy treatment center called Keystone Hall. And I went and sat there with another addict and alcoholic and helped them. And I came back and slept on that pile of blankets, happy as fuck. And so, like, I knew that, like, that happiness and freedom really for me was always attached to, like, wellness and purpose. But fast forward, and in March of 2021, I look around the world and I said, we're at the top. This is a bubble. I see people are making millions of dollars in crypto. People are making big money trading fucking pictures of monkeys. Like, this is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Like, the second we're selling hundreds of thousands of dollars for a picture on your phone of a monkey, that like some shit's got to change. And mind you, I started my business in 2008 at the beginning of the recession. So I'm old enough where a lot of people in today's world are not, that they don't remember what a recession even looks or feels like, or that it's even possible. I made the decision to sell my business. I stepped down as CEO. So I was the active day-to-day CEO of a business that had 325 employees. We were doing, you know, $50 million in revenue, 50-55, and everything was very busy. And I stepped out to executive chairman, but that void was filled with running the process with investment bankers and M&A legal teams. And, you know, that whole thing was a full-time job anyway. But then when I transact on December 21st of 2021, I sell my business, and my phone, which was lighting up like a Christmas tree all day long, on December 22nd, I wake up and like, it's just quiet. And there's, dude, I got all the money in the world. I got a jet. I got a big boat. I got a house in Miami. I got the Rolls Royce. It's still parked outside right now. You know, and I got all the toys, and I made it 2.5 months. And I was like, there's only like, I'm like calling people like, hey, you want to go to lunch? They're like, I have to fucking work, dickhead. What are you talking about? I'm like, oh yeah, that's a good point. You know? And so there's only so much like entertaining yourself with toys and money and whatever that you can do. And at the end of the 2.5 months, I remember talking to my chief of staff, who's one of the closest human beings on planet Earth to me. And I called her up and I said, we're doing it again. And, you know, we jumped back in with face first with 2 feet. And, you know, we've been back in the day to day. And I'm working as hard today, if not harder, than I've ever worked in my life. And I love it. Do I need to do it? No. I get up and do it every day because I want to. And I go to bed fulfilled and full and happy. This camaraderie, this team, this purpose, there's a reason, you know, there's responsibility. Is people counting on you, and mm-hmm. and that stuff to me, you know, is it lights me up.
You know, and it's the wisdom that you have because you've already done it before. You know, when I lost my company in September 2022, it was like, what do I do next? I don't have to work again. What am I going to do? And so I know what that's like. And the joke was, I'm semi-retired. My wife's like, that's going to last 18 minutes. Like, what the fuck, right? You're full of shit. So like, yeah, you're right. So literally day four, I'm on a whiteboard with some of my guys like, what are we doing now? Well, we're going to build this other company, and I'm going to give you guys equity. I'm going to throw money at it. I'm going to put all the pillars in place. We've done this before, built four before, crushed it. We've got this. That was the company I was telling you about. It's already doing almost 2 million sales. But it was the excitement and the fulfilling part of watching these guys who weren't owners. Now they're owners in this. I'm investing in them. I'm putting the pillars in. But even then, it wasn't enough for me because I was – people like you, people like me, people out there that when you get to the top or you get to where it's like, where's the road now? You need to have things to keep you busy and fulfilled, helping people, coaching, starting over. That wisdom you have, you're going to be able to help more people and build centers 2-3 times faster than you did the first time because you have the blueprint. That's the secret to success. That's what you get to coach. That's what I coach. Like you have, when you have the blueprint, I built a $1 billion business in 8 years. We did $600 million in revenue in 2021. I can build 5 $200 million companies in 3 years because I have the blueprint. Right?
Yep.
So that's what's key, I think, that people need to understand is you didn't get to the top and just walk away. You got to the top and said, let me give back and let me do this again. I just think that's amazing.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. And I've said that, you know, 1,000 times myself. And the analogy I've always used is it's like you build your first house and you got the blueprint and you're reading the book on how to do foundations and framing and hang windows and doors and siding and roofing. And everything that you do is a little off. The first foundation you ever pour, it's like this, you know, and the frame, you're going to make up for it. And then you're going to, you just kind of, by the time you get through the first house, it's built, it works. You're not going to tear it down to fix it. But that was my first business. There was so many things in my business that I was putting the roof on it. And I was looking at it going, damn, if I knew what I knew today, I would have done that differently. I'm not going to rip the frame down to fix it, but I would have done it differently. And so now it's like I'm building my second, third, or fourth house. And it's like, no, I know I'm cutting with precision. I know exactly how we do this.
Yeah.
This is what we do. And the other thing I thought of as you were talking there, you know, the importance of making it about other people. Like even what you just said, you're like, I made these guys owners. Like, dude, that me, like, I've done that. I my leadership team has equity. Like, that's cool. When I sold my last business, six people got life-changing money because they had equity that I had given them to get us aligned in our mission. And that was very cool. But the other thing that really I enjoy and excites me outside of the helping people in all these different ways that we're able to make impact is being the visionary and the creator.
Yeah.
And so like that next business you're building, it started as a thought.
Yeah.
You're probably staring at a wall at some point or staring at the ceiling in your bed and went, I'm going to do this. And then to see it come together. Like I remember that phone call when I called Lori and said, hey, we're doing it again. We're going to start a treatment business. We're going to call it Treatment X and we're going to open our first facility and it's going to be in Ohio. And we went out, bought, dude, it's open. It's got, I'll be there tomorrow running a group for 50 patients. And you know, we just hit 50 patients. You know, we're building the census and the amount of people. And so it's seeing everything come to fruition. And you know, it's like having the painting in your head and then getting it out onto the paper or whatever. That's cool. I love that.
There's so many analogies too. I like the building house one. I'm definitely going to steal that. I love that. I always think of too. It's like I've seen the movie before, so I already know what to anticipate. I can speed it up. I can forward through the commercials. Like I see what's going to happen, and that's the key to coaching, right? Let's get into the coaching now. The key to coaching, if you're building a business, and when you're building a business, I laugh. I tell these guys because they've been high level directors, been with me a long time, and they had gain share and profit sharing in the last business, but it imploded. So this business, I gave them you get real equity and you guys are running the show. Well, they're like, they've seen me do this and they've been a part of two companies. Some of them, one of them's fairly new. And they're like, okay, whatever you're doing, we're in. But I'm like, as things get hard, you start the business. This is what happened with us. And it's like, oh shit, we got to pivot. Let's pivot here. Oh, it's okay. You lose money the first 2 months. That's normal. I lost money in the solar company for 18 months. I didn't get paid for 2 years. Yeah, we switch. Finally, everything I've said, it's crazy, and thank you, God, for this. But that wisdom, it is all just falling into place like it's supposed to. Like, everything is going exactly how it's supposed to, which these guys are amazed, and they just build more faith and confidence into me, which is important because then it allows me to continue to execute or, like you said, cut precisionally and get things done the way it needs to get done. And we are, like, exploding. Now, I'm like, all right, I need to take this and give it to coaching. You do the same. You go through and whether you talk about, you built the house or you got the blueprint or you've seen the movie before, whatever it is. When you're talking to entrepreneurs, when you're talking to business owners, they already have an admiration for you. They already know who you are. They've already done the research. One of my mentors, Dan Locke, I don't know if you know him. He's one of the best human beings in the world. So Grant Cardone was part of my mentor a while back, and then now Dan Locke. And what he told me is people go to coaching for three reasons, and I want your opinion on this. One is status. It's like, oh, I belong to that country club. You know, hey, Eric's actually my coach. It's status. Two is access. They want access, and you talk about it on your Instagram. Access to your Rolodex. It's very important. And three is the coaching, and you have to be able to feed all three to build that business up. What are your thoughts?
I think that's all very true. A lot of people come to me for two more reasons. Well, I guess the coaching covers one of them. Community is another big one. Mm-hmm. A lot of my people come to me because they're lonely entrepreneurs and, they just want to be part of the community. And then, I get people in this sweet spot. It seems to be the same situation over and over again, which falls into my lap of people in the group, which are these entrepreneurs that have wonderful businesses, but they started off mom and pops and they've had some good growth and they don't know how to professionalize it. They don't know how to build a leadership team. They've plateaued, they're bottlenecked. They themselves are the biggest fucking problem. They're the business's biggest asset as well as the business's biggest problem. They're normally a slave to the company. I was on a call earlier today with a one of my members that I'm going to be going deeper in their business with them. I do that with some of them at an elevated program that I've called Business Mastery. Not that that's really original, but and this is a business that's printing money. They have 110 employees, and it's fucking pure chaos. Oh. I said, how many direct reports do you have? He says, I don't know, 20, 25. I said, how long could you get away from the business and turn your phone off and have things, you know, go well? He's like, I can't. And so these are the people. And so I call that tactical business advice. I get people that are entrepreneurs that don't know how to break through that process of professionalizing a business to make it so it's a business that runs without you, which is the most valuable business that you can build.
Stop right there. People don't understand that. They think if they're going to sell their company, that it's all going to run through them. You got to show these buyers that they don't need you to run. That's where you get more value. People don't know that. Now, I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. I mean, I stepped out as CEO, replaced. I had hired an oversized second number two, my COO, who had previously been a CEO of larger companies than mine. And he was part of my succession planning, that the plan was eventually I was going to step out and he was going to replace me. He came from healthcare. I worked side by side with him for, I don't know, a year and a half, taught him all the nuances of this industry and this business. I stepped out as CEO to executive chairman, which meant I didn't do shit. I went to a board meeting once a month. And for the last almost year of owning my business, I wasn't really involved. So when we got to, this is what's funny, is it's a challenge of ego. Here's what the entrepreneur needs to know, is that you are your own worst enemy with this, because you think you could do it better than everyone. And you're fucking yourself, really, in that. And so that was, you know, a process of internal work that I had to do in order to get over my own ego and really move this business from the Eric Spofford show to being a brand that was detached from me and positioning it that it doesn't need me. And it's almost like when your child grows up and leaves the house and they no longer need you. And you're like, well, shit, they don't need me anymore. You know, like this kind of
deal with.
It's tough to deal with. And so, you know, when I sold the business and we had management meetings with private equity groups and buyers, like they were so disinterested in meeting. They're like, you know, this guy has nothing to do with the day to day. Why? We're going to meet him and have a meet and greet. That's who we're doing the deal with. But on deal day, he's going home. And that's the only way you'll ever sell a business and not be chained to it, right? Otherwise, if they think that this business needs you, they're going to give you they're not going to give you all your money up front. They're going to make you roll over equity and be a partner with them. They're probably going to tie you to an earnout. Mm-hmm. And meaning that, you know, imagine you're now going to be an employee of your own business. And in order to get paid for the deal, the entirety of the deal that you've struck with this group, you need to work in the business and assure that these certain measurements of financial performance are hit. And if you don't hit them, guess what? You're not getting paid, or you're not getting paid all the money.
Yep.
You know, people, that is the second group of people I work with these entrepreneurs that go from owner operator and they're progressing into CEO business owner, you know, kind of professionalizing their company. And then I have a second group of people that are somewhere in that world, but understand a little better and want to prepare their business for an exit. And that's a lot. Sums up most of my coaching. And then I have other people that want to learn business and they're high achievers, or they're thinking about opening a business. And I got ones and twos of them. But the most of the people that I have, or the people that I see get the most explosive value out of being part of the group, are those entrepreneurs.
Some good stuff, Eric. And I agree with you 1,000%. You know, when we went to look to do a private deal, so I want to talk about two things. We went to look to do a private deal. I had to separate myself more from the company. And I'm a big believer in bench strength. You know what I'm talking about. You got to replace yourself. They've got to be able to replace themselves. You don't know what the new management team's going to do, what they're going to want. They want to know that they can send you out and the business is going to function. If not, you're tied into it. So we did 2 years of a rodeo, 21 and 22, pretty much doing it. We had 200 presentations that I do. I feel like I'm the best sales fucking person on the planet. You give me a presentation, my energy, motherfucker, you're buying. That was my strength, right? That I was presenting to Blackstone, Aries, Goldman Sachs, Tesla twice, Vivint, all, I mean, public and private coming, eating out of my hands. I said, fuck, I want to do that one day, right? And this is still one of the goals. But fast forward, we get the public deal to go reverse merger, and we signed the deal. We're supposed to close July 2022 for $1.05 billion. I got handcuffed. I was going to get a little bit off the top. They wanted me to stay in because it was going to be public. I had to take public CEO courses. So the life was going to be different, right? Not sure if I was super excited about it, but I was excited about giving our employees $100 million in stock. I was excited about being a public CEO. All those things, it's like, oh my gosh, this is a dream come true, till it isn't. But you brought up the ego thing. And I hindered our company from growing faster than it could have because of me and my ego and control of me not letting go, me thinking, you can't, I got to fucking do all this. And eventually you have to trust your people and develop your people and your bench to manage the business. Otherwise you can't fucking grow, because we're not made as entrepreneurs and business owner operators. As you talk about, they want to professionalize themselves and grow. They're going to have to expand their team in order to grow so they can focus on the growth. If you're managing every day, you're limited again, you're boxed in. And it sounds like you're teaching and coaching those entrepreneurs exactly that, because one of the biggest problems with business owners, you're right, is their ego. And they're the biggest asset, but they're also the biggest liability in the company. And you got to try to offset that. And the second thing I want to talk about, your inner circle and your other coaching. For the listeners out here might be interested in your coaching, and whether it be the group or the elite, I think you said, or the mastery, the one-on-one. And I'm also curious, because I'm setting up my coach. I'm in the infancy stage, been doing about 3 or 4 weeks, got, you know, some NFL players, some business owners, things like that. I'm wondering, and I know the listeners are wondering, how does this work? So they join the inner circle, which I love the name, by the way. They get in that group, talk about what that is, and then talk about what the next level is.
Yeah, Inner Circle is, I run a group call. I run it every Wednesday at 5 p.m. You know, we have, I think there were 50 people on the call last night, and then some that couldn't make it. We have about 70 members today. We have a monthly, it's tactical business advice, it's personal development, and then it's community. And so everything's kind of set up to be everything that I think that I needed along the way on my journey when I was at where a lot of these people are at. And so, you know, I get on the call and we do what we do every Wednesday, and there's a lot of value in that. And then we have a monthly networking event where we get people together in person. We break bread. We spend time together. I mean, I have that right at my home. I have a private chef, servers come in and throw a big networking event in my home in Miami. And we'll move it around a little bit. I have one this summer. We're doing it at my estate in New Hampshire. And then I run a quarterly mastermind that tickets are included. We just came off of that event last week. You're talking about it. And you did lie.
Look,
you
great, were, by the way. It looked
you
fucking
were, you were invited. You just couldn't make it. You're always invited. But yeah, it was an unbelievable event. And then I open up access for them. I follow them back on Instagram. I add them to a close friends group. And then I answer their questions quickly fucking all day long. And so, you know, they message me, hey, what about this? Hey, what about that? You know, I got one earlier today that was about how to deal with a client and an employee issue. The employee had created conflict with the client. And I talked through that with one of the members earlier this morning. I was talking about with a solar company person, actually, about how to recruit a CFO. And they're at this stage where they need to start bringing in high caliber people and building a real leadership team and professionalizing right. And, you know, what that job description should look like and how do they measure them and what does success look like and, you know, going through all of that. So those are the types of conversations I'm having with a lot of these people. And then the other piece is I give them access. And so the connections that I've been able to make for a lot of the members have been unbelievable, right? Like I've been networking for a long time. And so my Rolodex and contact list is wide. And I either know someone or I know someone that knows someone that could be helpful to my group. And so I'm constantly plugging them up and connecting them with, oh, you got to talk to this guy or you got to talk to this business. You know, I have, for instance, one of my members owns a business that does meal prep. You know, they prep the meals and they ship them to people, or the local delivery service. you know, Todd from Icon Meals, who has probably one of the most prolific meal prep businesses in the country, cut a deal with the UFC, you know, is growing like a weed and a real leader in the space, is a friend of mine. I was able to connect, you know, my local yokel, you know, member in Massachusetts who would never have access to these people. They don't even know where to find them, to Todd, and get this person invited to go to Todd's operation and go spend a day just observing.
Yeah.
I mean, how if you're an operator that's bottlenecked, how valuable is it to go spend a day at essentially a competitor, even though they're kind of in different markets, and see an operation that's four times the size of yours?
Yeah.
You know how much inspiration and how many questions are going to get answered in that day?
So many.
So, yeah, we do. And I made it affordable for, you know, the seven-figure and low eight-figure entrepreneur is the kind of the sweet spot. It's $2,000 a month. You know, and so I don't know, like if you can't afford $2,000 a month, you're not a good fit for the business, for the program anyway. And then secondly, from that, I do a business mastery and, you know, what a generic name, but whatever, it fits, you know, and that is I do a half day whiteboard strategy session four times a year. It's a year long commitment. And so we get together and spend 4 hours in front of a whiteboard. That could be you. That could be you and your leadership team, you know, whoever's appropriate for that. And we're mapping out a strategy on how to unlock value, grow, scale, and bring this motherfucker to the next level. And then I do a call every other week to go over the implementation of the strategy and how it's going and offer guidance and advice and oversight for the deployment of the plan. And then I have one day where at some point in the year, wherever it's appropriate, I will travel to them and I'll go spend a day at their business. And that's $100,000.
Dude, that's a lot like Dan Locke's Dragon Plan. I love that. That's a great model because you're touching the clients and he's selective. They fill out an application. I'm sure you do the same kind of pick who fits that mold. But he also has that same thing where he goes out there one time and goes over everything. Very similar. And I love hearing this because I'm trying to piece together, okay, where is my coaching going to be the best available for people? Where's my niche, you know, more of home services or independent people trying to brand and market or do digital marketing? But I'm picking your brain on this. And so I appreciate you sharing it with the listeners because a lot of these people listen and might be like, I want to learn from that fucking guy. I want to join his coaching. I want to do that. And it doesn't hurt my feelings because look, there's enough people out there for everybody. And that's why it's like, you know, I want to learn from you. You've been doing this a bit longer than me. How did Wes fit in? Tell me about you, the Wes Watson and Eric Spofford. Everybody's got a fucking Wes story. I've got a good Wes story. I've got a not so good Wes story. And then I've got a, okay, we're good again Wes story. I do. That's what the fuck I got.
Yeah, no doubt. Dude, me and Wes, I originally linked with Wes to do food stuff, you know, food and fitness. And he's really a magician with macros. And I found him very inspirational with all that stuff. I like him a lot because, you know, we're both... We come from similar backgrounds, right?
Right.
We're rough on the edges, covered in tattoos. We've been in the addiction thing. We've been in the crime.
I got a lot more tattoos than me. I'm still just getting started, but go ahead. Yeah, I saw. That's good.
Yeah. And then, you know, we became fast friends and, you know, he was pushing me over and over. We have a lot of mutual friends. And so we met through kind of that world of other influencers and business people, whatever. And he just started getting on me. He's like, E, you gotta be a coach. You gotta teach people business. You gotta do this. You gotta do this. And at first I was like, Wes, what the fuck do I know about being an online coach? Like, who am I? Russell Simmons? Get the fuck out of here. You know,
you gotta wear the tights and all though.
No. Yeah. You know, I was like, I'm over here doing my thing, bro. Like, you know, I put a little content out on the internet and enjoy a personal brand, but you know, I do that for other reasons, you know, attention is a commodity, not to monetize a coaching thing. And he kept pushing and pushing it. But one thing about Wes is he's relentless.
Relentless.
And, I know. And I love him for it. And finally, I was like, all right, you know what? Let me try this. Let me hop on my story and offer this and see what comes in. And so I got on my Instagram story. I said, hey, guys, listen, I'm going to be coaching entrepreneurs. I didn't even know what I was doing. I was just like, I'm going to be coaching entrepreneurs. If you're interested in that, give me a call. Like, shoot me a DM. And dude, I got a ton of DMs. And so I got a Stripe link. I forget what I was charging originally. I think probably the same price as I am now. But I got a Stripe link, and I hadn't even defined the program yet. They were like, what is it? I'm like, I don't know. They're like, when does it start? I'm like, I also don't know. Are you in or are you out? Like, and so I just started sending a Stripe link, and the next 2 days I did $100,000. And I was like, all right, this is a proof of concept. He's right. There's something here, right? I don't know what it is. I don't know how big it is. I don't know. And so I went back to him and I was like, all right, dude, like I got some people, they signed up. And now I got to figure out what it is I'm going to do for them. And then, you know, I defined what the program is. I started thinking, you know, what did I need? What did I need along the journey? What would have been helpful? I needed tactical business advice. I needed someone to tell me, Eric, you're a fucking egomaniac and you are holding this business back. Like I needed that type of like directness, but I also needed community. I was stuck in rural New Hampshire. I had like my first Lamborghini. We were talking about it. People would like videotape me as I was driving it. I needed to be around other successful people. I needed the camaraderie of how difficult business and entrepreneurship is and right. doing it with other people. And so it was all these things of personal development, business, you know, and community that I put together and created it. And then I also picked a couple dates. I picked, April 6th and 7th, which was last week, which was the mastermind dates. Before I even had a program, I was like, I'm going to run a mastermind. How crazy I am. I'm going to have my first mastermind. It's going to be April 6th and 7th. Wes, I want you to speak. I called up my buddy Sean Whalen. I called up my friend Jesse Lee. I called up Dan Fleischman. And I was like, hey, this is what I'm doing. It's going to be for the members of my coaching group. I'm doing it at my house. And in my head, I was going to have like 20 people, 20, 25 people. I'll clear out the furniture. You know, I got a nice house here. Put some seating in, put a little stage, have a caterer, have a chef, and have a nice little event. And we blew the thing out sideways. I mean, the coaching group has 70 members, and we just had an event for 100 people. And we had to move the whole thing to the Fountain Blue, a resort here in Miami.
Resort in Miami, too.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's great. Very well known. But and so, you know, we had a very successful few months launching the coaching thing. I've enjoyed it. It's brought me a ton of joy and happiness. And I've met a lot of really great people. And it's given me a platform and an opportunity to be of service to others. And such little, like to me, it's little because I've already been there. I've already spent the hundreds of hours figuring it out. I've already spent the millions of dollars in accountants and lawyers and consultants. And, you know, sometimes I think I undervalue the experience of what I've already been in and why it becomes so easy to help these kind of mid-tier entrepreneurs. But when I look back at it, I'm like, shit, I really suffered to learn that information.
Right.
You know, and it went through a lot. So it's been fun. It's been a good time.
No, that's good. I'm debating too if I want to do a mastermind. I know I want to set up a group. Right now, my coaching is basically elite one-on-one, right? And it's it ranges from $5,500, $7,500, or $10,000 a month, from $55,000, $75,000, or $100,000 a year, and it includes like full access to me, right? They need to get on a call, we get on a call. They need me to look at stuff, whatever. That's kind of where I felt at the beginning. I tried to do this group thing. I struggled with it. You know, I put it out there. I had a bunch of people coming in. It was like, join the Stripe. I was like, okay, hold on. I need an application. I need like a fucking website. Like, I guess I'm just so OCD that I had to like pause everything. But I have a lot of connections with some NFL players. So I've got like a couple, you know, big time players that I work with and some retired players.
I think that is a great market. Players, entertainers, musicians, you know, just whole entertainment in general, because they don't have anyone that I can see who has the business acumen. Like, how many of these guys go broke? They make a shit ton of money and they go broke, right? And no. So, you know,
being Mark Wahlberg does it. He's a friend of mine, been on the show a couple times. So we have some mutual business partners. Right. He's one of the only motherfuckers though in Hollywood that knows business. That's a fact.
100%. Yeah. No, he's a killer. Car dealerships, restaurants.
Yeah, and he had a place up toward your neck of the woods, up in Boston for a long time. Then he moved.
Yeah, from Boston. Yeah.
Yeah. So I met him with some mutual friends that helped him do F45 and Wahlburgers out of Michigan. So he got on the show, and I got to meet Sugar Ray Leonard, put him on the show. We all connected. It was pretty cool. I will tell you, you're right. I like that, and I like the home services just because, you know, the digital marketing, the lead gen, the ROAS that I can help create for home service companies. You know, right now they buy leads at Home Advisor, or they buy them at Thumbtack, and then they don't know what to do after that, right? So I've got to figure out, I think I'm going to start a group coaching again, you know, get that fired up with it for a lower cost. And maybe try to, I'd have to pick your brain. Maybe we do a mastermind together. I don't know. I've never done a mastermind. I don't know where to start.
Yeah. Happy to help, bro.
What do? You just have a bunch of people speak, go over some lessons. Like, what does that look like?
Yeah. I mean, we had, I structured the day that the first half of the day was a speaker, then a break, then Q&A with the speaker, then lunch, speaker, break, Q&A. Simple. Threw a party that night and then ran it back the second day.
I saw it. Consider me coming the next time, dude. And maybe if you need another speaker, I'm game. If you got room, baby, I'm in.
Absolutely. No doubt.
All right. Well, hey, listen, Eric, this has been great. I know we're wrapping up here, dude. I love your story. I love your enthusiasm. I love that you're a good dude that loves to give back to people. That's so key. We don't see enough of that in this world. I love that your West story. Mine was similar. I was like, he's like, you need to do fucking coaching. And then immediately the next day I was fucking buying in and coaching. And then I'm like, what do I do? And he's like, dude, you're fucking messaging me at 3 a.m. I'm like, it's on Instagram. He was so intense. I'm like, relax. I didn't know I wasn't texting you. It's on Instagram. He's like, fuck you. I'm like, holy shit. And then I'm like, fuck you. We start arguing. And he's like, listen, I'm cool. It's fine. My bad. You taught me a lot on this call. I'm like, holy shit, this motherfucker's bipolar. I thought I was bipolar. This motherfucker. Yeah. But I love him because he's Johnny on the spot. I need something. He responds. He pushed me. I need someone to fucking push me. People like you and me, we need hard motherfuckers to push us.
Yeah.
And that helped. That's where Wes was so valuable for me.
He's for whatever it's worth, he's a big Jason fan. We just spent 5 days together because he stuck around Miami and he was singing your praises while we were together.
I love the guy. I have no issues with him, except that he threatened to beat the shit out of me at 3 a.m.
That's Wes. You know what I mean?
I said, I love him.
I'm like, I ain't mad at you. It's cool, man. Whatever. Yeah. So I love him. And that's the point. Like, he pushed me to coach. And then, you know, I have Dan Locke, who does total white collar. And I'm somewhere in the middle, right? And I got to find my element. But picking your brain, it sounds like you're somewhere in that middle, too. So yeah, totally. I appreciate that. That's really cool to hear somebody with what you're offer is and how that's going, and so nothing but, you know, I wish the most success to you ever. I love what you're doing. I want to continue to stay in touch to hear how it's going with your new business, and definitely stay in touch to maybe do some mastermind or speaking together. And thank you for coming on the show. Everybody, you need to check out Eric Spofford. This guy is real. He's legit. He's raw. He, you know, he came from nothing and built something. He's given back and he's doing it again. So I appreciate it, Eric. Thank you for coming on the show, baby.
Absolutely, brother. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Bam!